we'll go down the list as it appears in Adobe Connect. And if you could just briefly introduce yourself, if you're with a constituency, please note that, briefly mention any other interest that led you to join the working group. Thank you for attending the first meeting. I'm Greg Aaron. I have the privilege of being your chair for this project. I'm the director of key account management and domain security at Afilias, which in my 8 years at Afilias, I've done a variety of things pre-registration and post-registration, including administrating sunrises and dealing with domain name abuse. Marika?
Yes, hi. I'm Marika Konings. I'm ICANN staff supporting this working group. I'm part of the policy team at ICANN. Glenn?
Hi, this is Glenn de Saint-Giry. I'm the GNSI Secretariat, and I'll be doing the administrative part of all the meetings.
Greg? This is Greg Ogorek. I'm with Civalence. We're a security vendor doing anti-phishing and open source intelligence. Spent 6 years at AOL fighting bad guys and doing the same here. So it's our interest is, you know, being able to find a safe path through this registration stuff, and if we can contribute to that process, we're happy to be involved.
Thanks. Gretchen Olive, I'm from Corporation Service Company. I've been doing this domain name thing for about 9 or 10 years now. I've been with CSC the entire time. We're a corporate domain name registrar as well as brand protection and trademark service provider. I've been involved with the registrar constituency. I'm also involved with the International Trademark Association and Association of Corporate Counsel.
Hello, this is Nacho Madot from .cat. I'm the guest on the list. I'm sorry. I didn't know how to change the name. So I apologize for that.
Hi, James Bladel from GoDaddy. I work in policy, corporate development, and participant in many ICANN groups, including this, and its predecessor, the Fast Flux, and some of the other drafting teams, and with registrar constituency.
I'm Jeremy Hitchcock. I'm formerly representing FSAC, but I work at Dynamic Network Services, which is a DNS operator. We're both a registrar, and we do DNS for some CCTLDs, and been seeing all sorts of different abuse stuff since pre-2000. Dynamic DNS was used for a lot of denial service things, so we see a lot of stuff.
Hi, I'm Christina Rosette. I'm an IPC rep on council, and I think, as of now, the council liaison to the working group.
Hi, I'm Margie Mile. I'm with ICANN staff. I'm in the policy group and will also be supporting this working group.
Hi, this is Martin Sutton from HSBC. I work within a group fraud risk function, looking at online fraud and brand abuse, and I also look after the domain name portfolio. I'm also a member of the business constituency.
Hi, this is Michael Connor. I'm also a member of the business constituency, domain name owner, longtime fan of the Internet. More recently ran the Minnesota's response to Y2K, getting dragged, sort of kicking and screaming back into the security cyber terror world and assets.
I'm Mike Rodenbaugh. I'm an officer of the business constituency and on the GNSO Council representing the business constituency. I also run my own small law firm, Rodenbaugh Law.
Hello, this is Jeff Newman. I'm Vice President of Law and Policy at Neustar. I've been here for 9 or more years. We've been combating abusive domain names at a registry level since 2006, and I'm the alternate or vice chair of the registry's constituency.
This is Richard Tindall. I'm with Enome, which is a large registrar, and we're also interested in the potential impacts of this group, both on the registrar business and on the new CLD process.
Philip Corwin, I'm a partner at the law firm Butcher and Andrews in Washington, D.C. I serve as counsel to the Internet Commerce Association, which is a trade group of professional domain name registrants, investors, developers, and we are an international member of the business constituency.
My name's Roland Perry. I'm an independent consultant on internet governance. Two of my major clients are the Right NCC and the eVictims Organization. This is the first, although I've been to several ICANN meetings, this is the first ICANN work group or anything like it that I've ever been involved in.
Thanks. Faisal?
This is Faisal Shah. I am the founder of Mark Monitor, and I'm also a member of the IPC.
Like also on Adobe Connect, we have one person who is not on the conference line, Guanghao Li.
Yeah, this is Guanghao Li from CNIC, also on the board of .Asia.
Okay. Well, glad you could join us.
Thanks.
Okay. Great. Thank you. And then we have several other people who have not joined us today, but they're on the list, beyond the group, and we may meet them in a future call. One of the things that is asked of all members is to submit a statement of interest. These are then posted on the working group site. And this is an opportunity for you to describe who you are in a transparent fashion, and also any interests that you may have. If you have not already submitted a statement to the staff, we'll recirculate the instructions. There's a basic template you can follow. And we'll take care of that bit of housekeeping. If anybody needs that, just let us know, and we'll recirculate the instructions to you.
All right. And I have a question. Is it Jisa?
Yes.
Yeah, I think, is it a statement of interest that you send of, on March 12th, and then that should be replied to Marika?
Correct. It was attached or was copied at the bottom of the email, but you should actually forward it to Glenn. She will collect them and post them on the relevant site, ICANN site.
To Glenn?
Yes.
All right. Cool.
The email address should be in that same email. It's the GNSO secretariat.
All right. All right.
Okay. Wonderful.
Sorry, Greg. I just have another question to ask. Is everybody on this list, on the mailing list? Because I see a name here, Greg Ogorik, if that's correctly spelled, that I don't recognize on the mailing list.
Okay, I had given my card at the working group kickoff meeting, and I've gotten emails, so...
And you've got
I think
emails.
He's on the mailing list, Glenn. There are a few names that still need to be added that I've been forwarding emails individually that should be somewhere in your inbox.
Okay, thanks.
I think Gretchen and Jeremy, amongst others. So.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you. Sorry to disturb, Greg.
Quite all right, Glenn. As chair, my job is very often to facilitate, but I'm going to speak for a little bit longer at this call in order to provide some orientation. It's important in these working groups for us to have a common understanding of the background and the processes that are used in ICANN working groups. If you have a browser, I would direct your attention to our working group homepage. The link to that was circulated along with the agenda. And that page contains what I'm going to call our foundational documents, including our charter, the issues report and a link to ICANN working group practices. And what we'll do today is talk a little bit about first the processes that are used in these working groups. Let me see. Find that link. I mean, basically, the processes boil down to a very few simple principles. These working groups are designed to, when possible, reach consensus. In other words, general agreement amongst the participants. That's the ideal situation. It is understood, however, that there may be a diversity of opinion in these calls and in the documents that we will eventually produce. And in those cases, our document will identify the level of consensus, either a pretty much complete, partial, diversity of opinion, or no agreement whatsoever. The principles ask that we also indicate the levels of support by noting who is kind of in which area of opinion. So as we start to produce a document, we will eventually have mechanisms for everyone to indicate their formal place that they would like to indicate they are. In general, our goal, of course, is collegial discussion. And again, we expect a lively debate, but I think all of our expectations is that it will always be collegial. In other words, I think it goes without saying that we will all be polite. The goal is professionalism. And if we have differences of opinion, simply indicate why that is. I think one of the things that we're trying to do in this working group is to do a lot of fact-finding. And so I think it's always great to express opinion, but also I think it'll be important for all of the participants to let the other ones know why they support a particular position. So tell us about your opinions, but also tell us about your experiences or data that you already have, and if there are areas where we need to bring in data or other experiences, we can do so. And also a little bit about the process is we have a charter. We will, when possible, stick to that charter. If we find out, though, that our charter needs modification, if we encounter difficulties that way, we can also take that back to the council and ask that the charter be modified. I mention that because Avery Doria is a big fan of that. She basically wants this group and all the others to make sure that they have what they need. And if we need clarity on anything, it's always okay for us to go back and ask the council. Okay. Any questions thus far? I believe a lot of you have participated in these groups before. I was wondering who is new to an ICANN working group? Greg, are you new?
I am.
Yes, I am.
Okay, and Martin, are you?
I am, yes, yeah.
Okay, anybody else?
Yeah, Phil Corwin. Phil Corwin, I'm new to this. I have one question. The statement you just made about modifications of the charter, I'm just curious, how far does that go? I mean, if we find that the charter is an obstacle in some way to the main goal, I understand that, but the fact that you can go back and you start a group where the charter provides a focus, and yet if you can keep changing the charter, I think there's possibly a danger of mission creep. So are there any parameters for limiting those changes? I'm surprised by the statement that the charter can be amended as we go along.
Well, what sometimes happens is that a group will get into an issue, and it may be a little different than what was originally understood. Because once you get into an issue, you start to understand the various implications and things that are involved. I don't think that any of us is probably interested in going in a completely different direction. That might be a little surprising. But if we do think about any modifications, that would be a discussion we would have in this group, and everybody would have a say. And we would have to decide whether it was too far afield or not, and then also the council will need to consider that. So I don't think we're talking about humongous changes. But if we do encounter difficulty, and it's because of the charter, we want to be able to accomplish our mission of having a good discussion. Does that provide a little background?
Yeah, thank you for that clarification.
Okay. And then Nacho is new as well. So anyway, that's the basis for discussion. We will operate when possible on consensus and so on. Let me also tell you a little bit about the process. In a working group at ICANN, our goal will be to create a work product, a document, which is known as the initial report. And we'll talk a little bit more about the contents of that when we talk about the charter in depth. But the idea is to present a document to the council so they can check in on our status. And then the initial report is something that the constituencies will then have formal input into. The report is published, and then there is a first round of constituency statements. So the constituencies have a formal opportunity to write back with their comments. And we'll publish this this process on the site. After that's done, there may be revisions to the report. Then it goes back to the council. And there is a public comment period where it's posted on the ICANN website. And a couple of weeks is given for the members of the community to post their comments publicly. Then those are taken into consideration by the group. There may be a second document, a revised document that takes those various comments into consideration. There can then be a second round of constituency input, so they can comment on changes and so forth, and eventually we arrive at a final document, which is presented to the council. And at that point, some working groups come to an end, and some may take on a different lifetime. So for now, our focus will be on working towards an initial report. Any questions about that? And what we'll do is we'll also publish an outline of this process on the site. Okay. Just a note about my role. It's my job as the chair to facilitate discussion, and one of my primary responsibilities is to help log the level of consensus on each of the points we're discussing. So I will endeavor to do that in a fashion that will be loggable and so forth. If I make any mistakes, please do let me know. A lot of my job is also to provide some sort of a structure for the discussions. Previous working groups in some cases have kind of been a little too freeform. I want to be very aware that everyone is very busy, and that participating in this group is a commitment of time. I just want to make sure that that time commitment of yours is honored. I'm efficient. But at the same time, there's a balancing act because we want everybody to be able to state their opinions and have an opportunity to comment. So while I'll try to be efficient, I don't want to step on anybody's toes ever. Please let me know how I'm doing. And as a member of the working group as well, I will chime in with my own personal opinion. But when I do that, I'm just doing it as one person amongst many.
Greg, this is Marika. Can I say something?
Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to, when you just discussed the document format, I just wanted to point out to the group as well that as it is not a PDP yet, there is no formal requirement to follow the process of the initial report, final report. It's something that you know you might want to do as it's a format that has been used and is a way to get public input and get input from the constituencies, but the group can consider as well if there are other ways that they would be more effective in getting to the desired outcome.
Okay. And I do personally highly recommend following the format because it provides those rounds of input. While we're not in a PDP at this point trying to write a policy, we might recommend that the council start some PDP processes at a later time based upon our recommendations. So I think those are things that folks should have a formal way of commenting on. Well, like I said, what I'd like to do is we'll we'll circulate that process for everybody to see if anybody does have some differing opinions about whether that we should follow that or not. That's open for comment. Okay.
Well, Greg, it's Mike Rodenbaugh. I just note that you know our charter does request a report back to the council in 90 days from now.
Well, what it asks for is not a report in 90 days. It asks that we it doesn't request a document. To be clear, we have to report back to them within 90 days with an update on our status. So we don't have a 90-day hard deadline for a document or work product. We're going to keep that open because we don't know what we're going to encounter and what topics we'll be discussing. Okay. I also have a procedural note. In the chat, Christina has noted that she suggests that working group members who miss a meeting be responsible for listening to the MP3 recording and catching up as appropriate. I think personally that's a good idea. Working group members are responsible for keeping current not only on the meetings but also discussions on our mailing list. Does anyone else have any thoughts on that? Good idea, bad?
And it's Mike Rodenbaugh. It's obviously a good idea. It just goes to your point earlier that we don't want to be wasting people's time on these calls.
Okay. I've got, it looks like there's assent on the chat from Mike, Martin, Greg, and James as well. Okay. Great. Okay. All of you who are at a computer, are you logged into Adobe Connect right now?
Yes.
I think everybody is. This is a standard tool that's used in working groups, and it's fairly versatile. It'll allow us to do various things. One of the things you can see, of course, is we have a chat, and you can chat to the entire group or to individuals who are logged in there on the attendance list. One of the things it also allows us to do is if we want to do straw polls or so forth, we can set up voting through this. You can indicate your opinions. It also allows you to raise your hand. Down at the bottom right, you'll see a little person with his hand raised. Would everybody like to try that? Pop open the little button next to it, and you'll see some options like raising your hand. Why don't you give that a try? Now I'm giving some applause to Mike Rodenbaugh, who was laughing. Okay. Since we may have a large group in these meetings, we can use this feature to manage the speaking cues. What Marika and I can do is, if you'd like to have the floor, just raise your hand, and someone will recognize you, and then you can and speak. Okay. So is everybody comfortable with that little feature? Why don't we try using that first, and then during the course of subsequent meetings, we can kind of get into some of these other features. I don't want to be hard and fast on the hand raising thing right now necessarily. We can just also folks can jump in as needed. Okay, if you could lower your hand then, unless you want to. Jump in. Okay. Great. Next item on the agenda is the review of the foundational documents. If you can, please go to our homepage where we find our charter. My thought here is to walk through it briefly to give everybody a foundation for what the group has been asked to do and what we're not doing at this point. Okay, so everybody there okay? Okay. So as was mentioned, this is not a PDP working group. At this point, we are not in the process for formulating any specific policies to recommend to the GNSO Council. Instead, what we've been asked is to form a group to collaborate broadly to further define and research some issues and to take the steps outlined in the charter. Now, the charter has a scope and definition of registration abuse section. I'll just read it out, especially for those of you who are not online. The working group should define the main name registration abuse as distinct from abuse arising solely from the use of a domain name while it is registered. The working group should also identify which aspects of the subject of registration abuse are within ICANN's mission to address and which are within the set of topics on which ICANN may establish policies that are binding on GTLD registry operators and ICANN-accredited registrars. This task should include an illustrative categorization of known abuses. Now, as a side note, we're to look into what may be in ICANN scope or out of scope. We are not final arbiters of that, of course. It's our job to examine what might be in and what or out and why we think that is. And we can also get opinion from other people, such as ICANN Council. The ultimate arbiters might be council. They need to consider those issues. ICANN staff, especially legal counsel, may have some input, and eventually some items go all the way up to the board even for discussion. So we're to do some research. We're to explain why we think something is in or out of scope, but we may not be the final arbiters of that. So is everybody clear on that point? Any additional comments, please? Okay. And I think one of the reasons why GTLD registry operators and ICANN accredited registrars are mentioned specifically is because ICANN has contracts with those parties. Those are known actually as the contracting parties. So there's the question of if something is within scope, then it might be something that could eventually become a party, or binding upon the parties. Okay. The next part of the charter says additional research and identifying concrete policy issues. The issues report outlines a number of areas where additional research would be needed in order to understand what problems may exist in relation to registration abuse and their scope, and to fully appreciate the current practices of contracted parties, including research to understand if registration abuses are occurring that might be curtailed or better addressed, if consistent registration abuse policies were established, determine if and how registration abuse is dealt with in those registries and registrars that do not have specific policies in place, identify how those registration abuse provisions are implemented in practice or deemed effective in addressing registration abuse. These are three main questions that kind of came out of the issues report that the staff wrote, by the way. And then it goes on to say, in addition, additional research should be conducted to include the practice of relevant entities other than contracted parties, such as abusers, registrants, law enforcement, service providers, and so on. The working group should determine how this research can be conducted in a timely and efficient manner by the working group itself via a request for information, in expert advice, and or by exploring other options. So this empowers us to go out in our fact-finding and request whatever information we need. So we can make formal requests by the group, and even if we think there's a study that needs to be funded, we can also recommend that. So for now, everything is fair game, and we will have some tools at our disposal. Based on the additional research and information, the working group should identify and recommend specific policy issues and processes for further consideration by the GNSO Council. And then there's a note about SAC participation and collaboration, and Jeremy is with us in that capacity. And I'd also note there are probably a number of other initiatives going on at ICANN, some of which are in working groups, that may have relevance to our work or may in some ways even overlap it. So we'll need to look at those. So, does anybody have any questions or comments about the charter?
It's Mike Rodenby. I'd suggest we address that SAC participation element soon, because I think there's an outstanding invitation to the council that we should respond to in some way. I know Aubrey's looking specifically for that fairly soon.
Okay. Mike, what specifically do you think we should do?
Basically, yeah, recommend that we accept the invitation and that we do have a collaborative effort. I think we already have started that with Jeremy on this group, but you know, opening it up for more folks from the SAC to participate, seeing if they have a group going that members of the GNSO Council or constituencies should participate in. Basically just responding to the request from Steve Crocker.
Jeremy, have you joined kind of in an? I guess we can make a formal invitation. What's your understanding of your role? Are you informal for now?
I think I'm formal. I'm gonna regret it later, I'm sure. But
okay, maybe what we ought to do is we ought to go back through the correspondence and get Steve Crocker's note. and we'll put that up to the list so we can take care of the any housekeeping we need to.
So, Jeremy, could you just tell us also, now that the SAC has published SAC 38 on abuse contact, still ongoing work in SAC on that issue, or are you guys done with it?
We published it Friday, and I think Saturday there was already discussion on a SAC mailing list about, I don't think we'll revisit it, but there was certainly further discussion, and it's certainly an area that that people on SAC are interested in, how to wrestle with, you know, from that topic specifically about abuse contact, how to have something which is both sustainable in the sense of it's a standard that can apply everywhere, but also in the sense that there are compelling privacy issues and balancing the two of those. So I'm not sure if we have any formal work products that are in the abuse area, but it's something that a lot of people are interested in. There's actually ongoing work on IDN display, and there's some abuse issues that were talked about in that, and that's 37, which hasn't been published yet.
Okay. Are there any other questions about the charter?
Phil Corwin, I noted that this was written before the Mexico City meeting, where it laid out a workshop, and probably given that we're going to be delivering a report within 90 days, which I believe is just before the Sydney meeting, we might want to think about whether we want to hold an open workshop or some kind of event or gathering in Sydney to let others outside the working group get a better idea of what we've come up with at that point.
Okay. And again, I'll note that we may or may not have a report by that point. We're not obligated to have a document at that point, depending on what we encounter. But I would imagine we would definitely have a meeting, and that this topic would be on the GNSO Council agenda, so we can deliver at least an update, perhaps through Christina. But Christina, would that be a reasonable assumption?
I actually had raised my hand because I believe it was the council's intention that A, the report would in fact be written, and that B, it would, that the goal, the aspiration would be that the work would in fact be completed. To the great extent, and to the extent that that is not the understanding of yourself and others, then I think perhaps, you know, I need to go back to the council and we just need to, you know, try and get that clarified for you.
Yeah, would you be able to look through the history and put a note up to the list with reference to the previous discussion and the 90-day milestone?
This is Marika. I think we did provided some feedback to the council, who raised indeed some questions as well in relation to the 90-day questions. I think Chuck was the one who actually put them forward. And I think as a group at that time, it was the Registration of Use Policies drafting team at that time, I think the reply we provided was that ideally the group would come back with its final report, but if the group would deem that wasn't possible, you know, they would be able to come back and give a clear indication of when they would be able to provide the final product. I think that is my recollection of that conversation. But I'm happy to find back those questions and answers and post them to the list.
Okay, we'll go back to the history and take a look and see what we have, and we'll. We can put that discussion up to the list in the meantime. Okay. See, one of the which brings me to the next agenda item. Unless any.
Greg, one second. There are a few people have raised their hands.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me go back to that screen.
We're just following rules, you know.
I'm sorry. okay, Christina, you're at the top. Do you have
That was my point. That was my point, simply to indicate that I think the council expectations were slightly different. So, you know, I'm hoping that we can, I've actually just found the email, so I'll see if I can figure out how to re-forward it to the list.
Okay.
So I'm good.
Okay, cool, thanks.
Let me take my hand down.
Okay. Greg, you're next.
I'm wondering on a point of clarification, we talked about registration abuse and not the use of a domain. Does the registration abuse include the activities of renewals and transfers as a registration function?
I don't know if anybody knows at this point.
We've had discussions in our preliminary meeting about things like the Domain Registration of America letters, you know, that go out to try to transfer your name, renew your name, in a sense, you know, transfer it. That is a form of abuse. That was brought up as an example of something. And I think that, you know, we should probably consider including registration, including renewals and transfer as part of their registration definition.
This is Richard. I would think that that's what was intended in the charter. That would be my interpretation, anything that occurs during the cycle of the registration.
Any other thoughts on that? It's a good question. It may have a bearing on the definitional work that we need to do. When we were in Mexico City, for example, I noted that we have some previous PDPs that touch on some of these items and would indicate transfers, or inter-registrar transfer, for example, it provides some partial balance, but I think, Greg, you've touched upon something that we should delve into. That's one possible area, for example, that we'll need to do some definitional work on.
Maybe we don't let renewal and transfer issues derail us from achieving our goal. Of getting, you know, the basic registration abuse concepts, you know, defined and I also don't want to miss out on some other forms of popular abuse just because they're not specifically the initial registration event.
Okay. Anything else, Greg?
Yeah.
Okay. Mike, you're next.
I guess just following up on those points, I think that, you know, at least the UDRP calls into, specifically mentions renewal and applies, you know, to renewals as well as initial registration. So that's one guide you have. And I just wanted to support what Mariko was saying, actually, about the council's interpretation. That's my recollection as well, that we should certainly try to get a report done. And just to put it back into the context of the new GTLD process. You know, this is one of the issues that the board is certainly focused on, and so the quicker we can do our work, the better, and the faster that the new GTLDs will move forward.
Well, that's an interesting question. Is our work designated as a dependency upon any other ICANN process?
Well, I wouldn't say that. I would just say that registration abuse has been flagged as one of the overarching issues that is, in fact, stalling the process on UTLDs right now. So if this group can come to consensus around that, I think that it could remove that hurdle.
Okay, so you're saying it would be useful for that process?
But I'm not saying it's gating, but it would be useful.
Could the this is Richard. Could the staff comment on that?
I would need to check internally, but as far as I know, nothing is dependent on this work apart from a decision by the council on what it's initiated PDP on registration abuse.
Mm-hmm. This is Margie. I agree with Marika. The processes that are being developed for the new TLDs are independent of this, and then going on separate tracks. So that would be my understanding.
Hold on. You're talking about the trademark issue, right? There's also an issue identified as abuse.
I wasn't aware there was a separate issue related to abuse outside of trademark. My understanding is that what's being worked on is trademark related, and to a certain extent that might pick up abuse if it involves trademarks.
So Margie, you need to go back and look at Paul Toomey's letter with the last version of the guidebook. It's very clear. There's two issues, trademark and then broader abuse issues.
We'll check internally to see if there are two tracks or whether they're being integrated in one, or whether people are looking to this working group to come back on that. But as far as I know at this stage, we're limited to the charter that has been given that doesn't talk about that. But we'll be happy to review that internally to see what the status is.
Okay, that would be great if you could post a note up to the list. With any background you may have on that particular topic.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Phil?
Yeah, I was just going to say on that point, as a practical matter, I would imagine that if we have a substantial report within 90 days, whether it's a final report or not, whatever practical input is provided by this group is somehow going to be at least there's going to be knowledge by the process for new GTLDs. I think the idea that they're going to be totally separate and not inform one another is not realistic. So while there may be formal separation, I think practically they're going to influence one another.
Okay. I don't see any other hands up. Are there any other comments? Okay. Well, these questions kind of lead into the next agenda item, which is our area of discussion. Registration abuse is an area that's pretty much undefined at this point. There is no common definition of what registration abuse might be, and one of the things we're also supposed to do is come up with illustrative examples. And illustrative examples could lead to recommendations to pursue more work on specific ones. I think one of the things we need to talk about is how do we approach and structure the discussion? Because it's a pretty broad area. We have some issues raised in the issues report, like what is registration versus use abuse, and so on. And in some ways, it's a theoretical or conceptual discussion if we're discussing a general definition. But on the other hand, it's also a discussion about specific problems, because that allows us to kind of wrap our heads around specific problems which might need further exploration and work. So I think if we can figure out a way to structure the discussion, that'll be really useful and allow us to make progress. And I don't have any recommendations yet on how to do that. Now, when we were in Mexico City, some folks did offer some specific topics or specific problems or specific abuses that they were thinking about. We may want to start a list of those, for example, so we can track them. But I'd like to throw the floor open to discussion of how are we going to start pounding this amorphous thing into shape a little bit? And how is it best to proceed? So I see Martin's hand up.
Hi, Greg. Just giving some brief thought to this, and from the discussions that were held in Mexico, there was some cases where domains were listed in and coded in new malware. So there was some intelligence prior to a registration actually taking place that is starting to circulate. So there was a couple of examples given. I think also that at the registration stage, there is probably some information that can be looked at for various cases which illustrate this is a suspicious type of registration. It could well be the use of specific credit card, the Whois data. And then you have the post-registration type issues, which is where perhaps people identify that actually the use of that domain is now abusive and therefore need to take action, whether that's a cease and desist, take down UDRP, whether it's then acknowledging that the Whois data is invalid. Those tend to be post-registration. So just as an offer of an idea, should we be looking at structuring it around pre-registration, registration, and post-registration type abuses? Because I think when you look at it that way, you may then find easier ways to look at solutions to those issues.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So breaking it into pre-registration, registration, and post-registration phases. And your example included domain names that are highly suspicious, such as those encoded in malware, but have not necessarily been registered yet. What does one do about those? Okay. Okay. Nacho, did you have a comment?
I was just showing that I agree with Martin's suggestion. I think it's a very, very good idea. Because I think the only way to reach a theoretical level in which we find patterns is to try to localize some of these cases. And dividing them in these three stages, I think that it makes it quite easier.
Okay. Any other brainstorming on how to structure things? Greg?
I would agree with Martin's approach, and then to carry the flag, I would also include renewal and transfer as a fourth and a fifth broad category.
Mm-hmm.
If we have the category separated out, we'd start with one category. Let's brainstorm on all the abuse types, get them all listed, and then go through each one,
mm-hmm.
attempt to define it and build a consensus.
Okay. Would, for example, transfer and renew issues fall into the post-registration category?
Probably. But if we want to keep them separate for discussion's sake.
Hi.
Okay. We're still deciding on whether or not renewal and transfer are to be included in general. So if we've left them categorically distinct, then at least they can be stripped out if we decide that we're not covering that.
Okay.
Oh yeah. And since we're brainstorming, and our goal is to come up with and define abuse by name, right, and not to discuss mitigation attempts and what could be done about it. Per se, it's really just to come up with a consensus of what is abuse, how is it defined, and how we should recommend going forward. You know, how those abuse types should be treated, whether they be a best practice or a mandatory suggestion or whatever, right?
Okay. Okay. Anyone else? Christina has noted on the chat that she liked Martin's suggestion. Nacho and Greg mentioned listing specific examples. And Christina says she's going to have to drop off. So take care. We'll talk to you soon. In the sessions in Mexico City, folks within this group and then attendees at the workshop listed some topics for discussion. Would it be useful for us to go back through the transcript and start creating a list of specific items? I'm thinking at least that way we've taken the participation into the group, and then we have some specific examples we can go through as we work on the more theoretic definitions as well. Okay, and I see Nacho and Gretchen note that they thought that was a good idea. Richard?
Yeah, and it's Richard Tindall too, because I've already stacked the deck here on working group membership. So we can either start to gather examples, look at what the examples are, and then try and deduce what we think. If we agree on that the examples are abuse, then we can work from that toward the definition of abuse, or we can do it the other way. We can ask in any sort of example or any predetermination, we can try and come up with our own definition of abuse and then look for things which fall into that category. So I'm not sure which is the best approach, but it seems to me there are two distinct approaches there.
Okay, so two tracks. One looking at specific examples and then another going back to the definition. And that might include, I think, understanding what is currently within the contracts. There was some notation in the issues report about scope that might be key for us to examine. Okay. Greg, did you have... Would you like the floor?
I was just logging agreement.
Oh, okay. Great.
Little check mark. You know.
I've got my hand up.
Okay. Martin?
Thanks. I'm just thinking here, could we use the knowledge and experience around the telephones here? We've got Faisal and Gretchen that provide services to major trademark owners and have a wealth of knowledge to tap into, which is lists of brand abuses with actually some volumetrics that go with it, so they could actually potentially the sort of high risk or high volume type threats that are out there for brand abuse that relate to domain name abuse as another starting point.
All right.
It just saves reinventing the wheel.
Yeah, this is Faisal. We can we'd be happy to provide that kind of information.
This is Gretchen. Same here.
The other thing there of benefit is that there is already some definitions then in place that are used. We probably just need to amalgamate those or fine-tune those as a consistent definition throughout.
Okay. So do the two or three of you want to take that as an action item?
Happy to do so, yeah.
That might work with Martin on it.
Okay.
Cheers.
And what you could do is work on that. And for these kinds of things, I would suggest that we use the mailing list. Remember that's always available publicly online. and we can all use that to trade drafts and discussion in the group. Just remember, it's also publicly accessible, and that's a good thing because it's transparent to the rest of the community. All right, so we'll take that as an action item. What should we call that? Definitional work?
Yeah. The other thing there, though, it may not capture everything, so I think this is where we still need to at least start. It gives us a good start, but think of other things that need to be combined within there, because it will not normally cover the abuses that we were talking about earlier with Conflicker, malware, pre-registration examples. It doesn't give anything on the renewals type scams that are going on.
Okay. By the way, you mentioned Conficker, and I wondered if everybody in the group was familiar with that, what that is, because I know some of you are. Would anybody like to hear more about Conficker? And feel free to help me out. But Conficker is an internet worm. Piece of malware that spreads amongst Windows machines, and it's infected several million machines worldwide since October. The interesting thing for this group is that it can be controlled through domain names. Now, that's not necessarily unusual for malware. Malware can be, and botnets can be controlled in various ways, and some of them used to use IRC channels, for example, and a number of have offered command and control through domain names. So what Conficker does is it has an algorithm in it that generates domain names that would be viable for command and control on certain dates. It doesn't go out and register these names, but the bad guys could go out and register names for use on the appropriate dates and then use that to control and update their botnet. So these are large lists of domain names that are viable, and if you're fighting the botnets, what you want to do is to prevent the criminals from having access to those names. So what do you do? It's an interesting situation. Previous versions used GTLD names, and the GTLD operators, along with a couple of CCTLDs that were affected, like .cn, went out and blocked those names ahead of time, so they could not be used for bad purposes. Martin, would you like to add anything?
No, because I think that's fairly well covered, and there was explanation at Mexico, but I think it's just this idea that it is getting into the chain of events within the coding of malware, which gives us intelligence that can be utilized, but how it's utilized can be difficult if, for example, that it's across different TLDs, whether or not they be GTLDs or CCTLDs, because how are you going to manage the blocking of all of those domains as and when they may be registered?
It falls perhaps into the pre-registration category.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't see anyone else's hand raised. Does anybody else have anything they'd like to add? Well, maybe one thing we ought to do is go through the transcripts from Mexico City. Which would be our initial working group meeting, and then the public workshop. Make a list of all of the specific potential problems that people raised, and then, of course, we can add our own if any of you see any you'd like to add to that list. But maybe what we ought to do is start a working list that we can refer to, and maybe eventually some of those get blown out into writing in our report even. So I'd like to get something down on paper is what I'm saying. Do we have any volunteers for that work?
Greg, this is Marika. I'm happy to go through the transcripts of the workshop and the meeting and pick out the things there that I think might be relevant and put them together in a document that people then can add to.
That would be wonderful. I know we have a transcript of the workshop. Do we have a recording of the first meeting?
I would need to check that with Glenn. Glenn, are you still on?
Yes, I'm still on. Was there no... which room was the meeting in?
It was on the Monday morning. I think it was Don Diego 4.
Ah, no, there was no... That was the meeting. No, there was no recording or transcript.
Okay. I think I did take some notes, so I'll try to go back to those.
Okay.
We'll reconstruct that one as best we can. Okay. Okay. Let's use that as our document of that lists specific items. And Jeremy also volunteers. Jeremy, you were in the initial meeting, as I recall. Is that right?
That's correct, yep.
Okay. Do you have any notes from that meeting?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, maybe on the list during the course of the next 2 weeks, we can see who does have notes, like Marika says, and we'll start to add things into her document. Okay. Jeremy, do you have anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that when we're thinking about registration abuse and the type of, and this is probably getting a little bit ahead of ourselves and thinking about what the outcome is, but the type of registration abuse that I can actually has tools to use against pre-registration abuse or any of those things is very different on the GTLD side as it is the CCTLD side, because those actors are, or those registries are not regulated like they are, not contractual parties like the GTLDs are.
Very, very true. What do you think might be the implications of that?
I guess generally speaking, if there were put strict rules on pre-registration or on registration on all GTLDs, then if I was a bad actor, I would just find whatever the least restrictive CCTLD was, and I would go make all my registrations there. Not to say that they shouldn't have policies on those things, but it's just more of a thinking about where efforts of this working group will be applied, and the GTLD space is really the only place that I see that it getting directly applied.
Well, one of the things that we can do is to recommend policies, which, as recommended, we look at policies, which would be binding on GTLDs. However, the group can also make other kinds of recommendations, which could include things like best practices, which could be recommended to all TLDs. So the options are open to us at this point. I see James has his hand raised.
Hi, just a couple of quick comments. One was that back to the Conficker warm discussion, perhaps an overview of how that worked and how it was intercepted or mitigated could be posted to the list, because I think there may be some visual elements involved that are difficult to follow on the conference call. And secondly, I just wanted to point out, Marika should still have some of my slides, for example, from the workshop. So if we could maybe add the slide decks into the transcripts, that might be helpful.
Okay. And I can send some links up to the list about Configure and how it's been dealt with to date. I'd be happy to do that.
And the only other item was I noticed that Christine has dropped off, but maybe this question is directed more towards Mike. Is it the council's expectation that Greg mentioned earlier with the discussion of the charter that this is not a proper PDP or it's a pre-PDP working group, but does this mean that a full PDP is the expected outcome of this group, including a charter motion, or is that still yet to be determined?
Definitely yet to be determined. It's just one possible option. Look at it as we did with the domain tasting issue. This is sort of the preliminary, you know, ad hoc group it was called at that time, that's tasked with putting together the factual situation from which, and some recommendations, you know, if we can come to consensus on them or otherwise, just document what potential avenues could be for the council next. You know, that could be a PDP or it could be other things. It could be more work.
Okay. So I guess I'm having trouble imagining what some of those alternatives could be. Maybe as we get further on, we can flush those out.
Well, so for example, in domain tasting, we didn't have a full-blown PDP after the domain tasting group. We had a shorter process, basically, as I recall, because it was realized that we'd already done a lot of the work that would be done in a PDP.
Okay.
Okay,
thanks, Mike.
Okay. Richard?
Yeah. So I guess I'm still struggling with what abuse means, the definition. I know we're headed toward the definition of that. The clear case to me is that it's illegal activity, but you know, clearly it could be other things apart from that. I was just wondering if some of the folks on the call who really live and breathe this stuff could give, just throw out there a couple of working definitions of what they think the main abuse is. That would be helpful for me.
You know, I don't know if it's helpful, Richard, but it's Mike Rodenbaugh, and I would just say that abuse is really any sort of illegal activity that comes to the attention of...
I'm having trouble hearing, sorry.
Sorry, is this better? I would just say that abuse can be defined in its broadest sense anyway as any sort of illegal activity that is brought to the attention of a registry or registrar, because they're in a position essentially to deal with it.
I have a question. Must it be illegal? The domain tasting issue was one where it was basically determined to be an abuse, but it wasn't illegal. It was taking advantage of a loophole.
I guess that's fair enough. I would prefer not to couch it in terms of illegal or legal, because then the next question in my mind is, well, whose law are you talking about?
Okay. Jeremy, you have your hand raised?
I was just going to add malicious to the definition of abuse, just like Mike said, you know, whose law do you define? There's certainly certain types of law where any of these activities are legal, perfectly legal and perfectly acceptable in the local jurisdiction, but you know, this group would probably unanimously identify some type of activities as things that we would not want to see. So somewhere between malicious and illegal, but it's not always both. It's not one or the other. It really depends.
That's see Phillips' hands raised.
Yeah, well, I just want to note that on the legal, illegal, there, certainly criminal activity should be included. Trademark infringement is illegal, though not always criminal. That should include, and there may well be other abusive actions which, while not criminal or illegal, this group wants to address. However, with the caveat, just reminding everyone that the charge of our group is to address abuses in the registration process, and that you know, if someone is abusing a domain name, but there's been no abuse in the registration process, it's probably outside the scope of our group.
Okay.
It would seem to be clearly outside the scope of our group. No, in these, certainly in these criminal activities, there's almost, I don't know of any that don't always involve abuse in the registration process, whether it's using stolen credit cards or providing false WHOIS, intentionally false WHOIS information, et cetera. Criminals tend to abuse the registration process consistently when they're planning a criminal enterprise using domain name.
Okay, thank you. By the way, we're coming up on the top of the hour. We had scheduled this meeting for an hour and a half, so we should probably start to wrap up. A question has been raised: should we have our biweekly meeting for an hour, or should we meet for a longer period of time? What are your opinions? An hour or an hour and a half every other week?
Couldn't we just schedule in an hour and a half, and hopefully the agenda will drive the actual time needed? I think it's easier to schedule in 90 minutes and then reduce it down rather than the other way.
Yeah, I guess question is, can the majority make 90 minutes available?
Yeah, I
think 1 hour. I think I like Martin's suggestion. You know, if we can at least schedule it in and see how it goes, I'd rather start bigger and get more work done sooner, and get an idea of what our work is like before we decide to cut down the calls to, you know, 1 hour every 2 weeks is just not very much time.
So Martin, you're okay with it. Mike, you're okay with it. I mean, I can make an hour and a half available. Is there anybody else who would not be able to accommodate up to an hour and a half, at least for the next several meetings? And
this is Faisal. I'm okay with an hour and a half.
This is Gretchen. I'm also fine with an hour and a half.
Okay. Marika, Glenn, and Margie, are you going to be able to be with us?
Yeah, we do have a conflicting internal call, but we probably need to review if we can maybe change that.
It seems to be, it'll be all right.
Okay. Let us know if any problems there.
Okay.
But it sounds, and Phil and Mike have logged in and said an hour and a half is. It sounds like we have a consensus. Let's schedule in 90 minutes, and if we don't need it, we find that's fine. Okay, sounds good.
And biweekly or weekly?
We decided in Mexico City to go biweekly.
Okay.
In this same time slot. So the next meeting would be
the 30th of March.
The 30th. Does the EU go to daylight savings time around the 29th, by the way?
That's right, yes.
Okay, so.
So I'll work that out. If this time EDT suits you, I'll work it out for the for everybody. For the next meeting, I'll let you know.
Okay, so I think for the moment we're planning on the same time UTC.
So if this time is okay for you for EDT,
mm-hmm.
then I'll work out the UTC for you with a change of time.
Okay. good. We have a few takeaway action items that we can pursue through the list. And please let me know if I've missed any. But we're going to check off on our SAC invite if Mike and Jeremy could look at the correspondence and maybe find Steve Crocker's note, put that up to the list, and we'll check off on that. There's a question about Sydney, and I'm assuming we will definitely have a working group meeting there, and there will be some sort of a council discussion and update there. So we should put that on the agenda for Sydney. There's the question of the 90 days. Is that the target for a document? And Christina was going to look back at the correspondence and put that up to the list. There is the Marika is going to post to the list any background about dependencies. For example, are any other groups looking to us for guidance regarding new TLDs or so on? Marika was also going to look through the transcripts from Mexico City, and we'll start a list of specific possible issues for discussion. I will post some information to the list about Conficker. Is there anything else that's an action item for the next meeting?
Statements of interest?
Ah, yes, statements of interest. Thank you. If you haven't done that, please send that in using the guidance in the template.
Well, are we going to start pulling together instances of abuse? I thought Faisal and Gretchen were going to come up with
something. Yep, with Martin. Yep.
Cool. Okay. That's yes. Yes. Gretchen and Martin. Definitional work. Thank you.
Faisal's in that party too.
And Faisal.
Oh, thanks, Gretchen.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You're volunteered. Okay. Did I miss anything else? Okay. So how do you think this first meeting went? Any suggestions or comments?
I think you did a nice job laying the foundation. I'm sure all of us want to do a little more substantive work on the future calls, but we got to get it off on the right foot, so job good.
Okay. Anything else from anybody? Okay. All right. Well, we'll have our next meeting on the 30th, and we'll get the scheduling information from Glenn. In the meantime, we can go to the mailing list, and we'll have a variety of things being posted up there, and we can start discussion. So thanks for your time. Thanks for helping get this group underway. Always look forward to your comments about how I'm doing. And if there are no comments, we will end on time.
Great. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thanks, everyone. Have a good day.
Thanks.
See ya.
Bye.
Sure.